I loaded my AK-47 and I opened the safety pin, and my friend who was sitting beside me shouted at me, "You are not supposed to open your safety pin to load the weapon within a plane." I told him, "Shut up, this is a real war." And you know, and he suddenly made this transformation in his mind, and I made this transformation a few hours before that.
Amir Ofer was heading into one of the biggest firefights in Israeli Special Forces history. An Air France flight from Tel Aviv to Paris had been hijacked and brought to Entebbe Airport in Uganda, Africa. The terrorists demanded a $5 million ransom and the release of 53 Palestinian and pro-Palestinian militants. But Israel had a policy of never negotiating with terrorists. Instead, they called up their top-secret counterterrorism team known as Sayeret Matkal to perform a daring, near-impossible rescue mission. Welcome to Covert, a show about the shadowy world of international espionage and top-secret military operations.
My issue was, at that time, to make sure that we can get the hell out of there.
I'm Jamie Rennell, and I'm going to take you inside history's greatest special operations missions to learn about the brave soldiers who risked their lives to terminate the world's most wanted men, eliminate terrorist threats, and protect countless innocent lives.
They were totally sure that they are now going to be executed. There was no question. They didn't think that anyone coming to save them.
In this week's episode, we continue the story of Israel's special forces saving hundreds of passengers on board a hijacked plane. This is Entebbe, Hostage Rescue Part 2.
There were Arab terrorists, there were German terrorists from the Badermeinhof gang. A Ugandan dictator with about, the information was, or the intelligence that we got was that there are between 200 and 1,000 soldiers in this specific airbase. When you think that you are 29 against, let's say, 1,000 and about 8 to 15 terrorists who are opening their eyes on 100 hostages, and the goal of the mission is not to kill the terrorists but to prevent them from killing someone else, which can be done within a second, it's a crazy operation.
The Israeli rescue planes had crossed nearly 2,000 miles of hostile airspace to get to Entebbe. Joshua Shaney was piloting the plane carrying the attack force. As they got to the border between Kenya and Uganda, the pilots broke formation and separated. Shaney continued directly toward Entebbe, while the others approached the airport from another direction. The aim was to time their arrival to maximize the element of surprise. At 11:01 p.m., Shaney managed to land without raising suspicion by pretending to be another scheduled incoming flight. His plane was carrying a Mercedes and a series of trucks identical to Idi Amin's convoy.
We went out of the plane, three vehicles. The Mercedes was leading, and then three Land Rovers. I was sitting on the back of the second Land Rover, so I was practically the last in the convoy. You know, my expectations was to see giraffes and tigers and lions because it is on the equator, and I read so many books about it, and there was nothing. Nothing, just emptiness and quiet and silence. We drove for about 10 or 20 seconds, and then there was a small hill, and when we crossed it, the plane behind us disappeared, and we were totally alone, far, far, far away from Israel, in the middle of nothing, and I never felt such aloneness. I mean, this was the biggest, I had been in many remote places and dangerous places, but I never felt such aloneness. And I remember these two feelings. One is the feeling of terrible loneliness, and the second is that I saw 29 shadows of 28, because I was at 29, shadows of people or soldiers holding their weapons in the darkness. And I thought to myself, how many of these will stay alive in 5 minutes?
As the convoy snaked its way along potholed roads toward the terminal where the hostages were being held, the second Israeli plane was coming in to land. But its pilot, Arya Oz, ran into trouble.
It was stormy, a lot of instability. The aircraft was tossing around. It was night. a lot of lightning, a lot of thunderstorms, huge clouds.
The storm was violent, but Arya is a special forces pilot, trained to deal with any conditions. And despite the dangerous weather, he began to make the descent towards Entebbe.
We approached Lake Victoria. The weather somehow calmed, although over Lake Victoria there was some activity, weather activity. When I was at approximately 1,000 feet over the lake, I saw the lights of the runway very clear. All of a sudden, the lights went off. Complete darkness. My first officer unbuckled his harness, stood up, peered through the windows, the front windows, looking for any clue. Where is the runway?
In near total darkness, Arya somehow managed to land the plane safely. At that same moment, Amir's convoy was nearing the front gates of the well-guarded terminal. The next moments were critical. They had to get right up to the building without being detected. Riding in the Mercedes was Yoni Netanyahu, one of the commanders of the assault. Behind him, the rest of the men were in the Land Rovers, pretending to be Idi Amin's official escort. The success of the entire operation depended on no one daring to stop the president's convoy. Then, disaster struck. In front of the convoy, Amir Ofer saw two Ugandan soldiers, their guns lifted, as if ready to shoot.
And then at a distance of about 200 meters, we saw two guards. One was on the right-hand side of the lights, and the other was on the left-hand side of the lights. I'm sure that there were many more, but we didn't see them because it was dark. I could see the right-hand side guard aiming his rifle toward the Mercedes from a distance of about 5 meters or so.
Netanyahu had just seconds to react. The convoy was still 150 meters from the terminal. If he broke cover and started a firefight, the terrorists would surely hear the commotion and begin killing the hostages. To Amir's surprise, Yoni shot the guards with his silenced assault rifle.
There were a few shots from the Mercedes with silencers that hit him. And then there was a burst of non-silenced fire. And at this moment, it was obvious that the element of surprise gone. Now this happened about 150 or 200 meters from the terminal. It was too early. It was not according to our original plan.
The events unfolded so quickly, the Ugandan soldiers were confused. One of them ran towards the convoy to find out what was going on.
And one of us simply took a machine gun and cut him to pieces. The idea, by the way, was not to kill the Ugandan soldiers or whatever. We didn't come to kill anyone. But there was no way to leave any opposition when you have to carry out hundreds of citizens. So it was totally unacceptable to leave any enemy in this territory.
Inside the terminal, the hostages were terrified. Neely Ben-Dor and Sarah Davidson awoke to the sound of a heavy firefight.
About a few minutes before 12 o'clock, I start to hear a shooting, about three shootings. Instinctively, I jumped and ran to the bathroom. It looked like a good place to hide. And then we started to hear shooting all around us from the windows. It was very frightening.
We heard a shot outside. And then few shots afterwards. We were sure that that's the end. We crawled towards the bathroom. We were sitting very close to the bathroom. They were shooting, terrible shooting all around. Noises, shouting, lights, everything.
Everything depended on how quickly the assault forces could get to the hostages.
It was critical to enter as fast as possible to the building in order to remove all booby traps and to kill all the terrorists who can, you know, throw two or three hand grenades and kill everybody there. So the timing was critical.
Amir Ofer was the first to reach the terminal. he was carefully moving along the wall of a corridor leading to the hostages when the glass next to him exploded.
It was a huge glass wall. All the glasses shattered. And someone was... I didn't hear the shots because I was so concentrated or focused or whatever. But I saw the glasses shattering and the whole glass collapsed. And someone was shooting in the terminal about 5 meters inside it, and he was holding an AK-47 and he was shooting at me directly, and he was, you know, I could see his hands like this because he was shooting a huge burst of fire. And, you know, at this moment you're not thinking anymore, you're just, either you are freezing or if you are well trained, you are just doing what you are supposed to do. And, you know, the bullets were one here and one there, and I simply didn't care. I just shot him accurately 3 or 4 bullets and, you know, tuck, 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 and that's it. And I saw his head falling. I jumped into the terminal, I shot him again to make sure that he is dead. And then I looked to the right and suddenly I saw that I'm alone in a huge hole, about 25 meters on 15, yeah? And then I suddenly understood that I am the first to be there. I didn't know it until I went into the terminal. And then I understood that I'm in a very big danger.
Standing alone in the vast terminal, Amir heard shouting outside. His commander and longtime friend, Yoni Netanyahu, had been shot.
I heard someone shouting that Yoni was hit. I could see it in my on my left side, about 20 or 30 meters away from me. But I didn't give any... I mean, I didn't care about it, not because I don't care about him, but because these were the instructions. I mean, you don't take care of any wounded until you clear up the building.
Sneaking past a foreign army undetected and rescuing a bunch of hostages is challenging. You know what else is challenging? Hiring great talent. You have to go to multiple job sites, sort through stacks of resumes. Half the people aren't even qualified. But hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done, ZipRecruiter.com/covert. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but that's just the start. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employees who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualifying candidate through the site within the first day. With results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest-rated hiring site in America. And right now, Covert listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/covert. That's ZipRecruiter.com/covert. ZipRecruiter.com/covert. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. The rest of Amir's team was now filing through the opening where the glass wall once stood. As he scanned the building, Amir saw a slight movement across the terminal. Before he could react, 4 shots rang out. Bang, 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 bang. The terrorists slumped to the ground.
They turned their rifle to shoot me in the back from a distance of 2 meters, and then he came and shot them.
A fellow Sayeret Matkal fighter had entered a side entrance and taken them out with no time to spare. With the hijackers now fully aware of the Israeli presence, it became a race against time to find the hostages. The unit rushed through the terminal. They turned a corner to see several civilians huddled around mattresses on the ground. They'd found the hostages, and there appeared to be no terrorists in sight. 2 men stood up and walked towards Amir and his troops, looking thankfully at their rescuers. But one of the soldiers noticed something strange.
And then suddenly one of them saw flashes from the pocket. And he knew these flashes, that he correlated them to a Russian grenade that he's familiar with, that 4 seconds before exploding, you can see these flashes. So he shouted, "They have a grenade."
The hostages and the Israeli soldiers ran for cover. The grenade cast shrapnel and smoke everywhere, but thankfully, no one was hurt. Amir quickly resumed the operation. but he still didn't know how many other terrorists were in the area.
We killed the three terrorists. I killed the first one, then Amnon, the two others. And then there were a few moments in which we were scanning the whole room with our eyes looking for more terrorists. And we didn't see any. And then I left my right hand on the trigger, and in my left hand I put the loudspeaker, the microphone of the loudspeaker that I had on my back, and I shouted, "Everybody lie down, kulam lishkav," in Hebrew, "everybody lie down." And they just sticked to the ground their heads and nobody moved.
The hostages obeyed, but they still had no idea who these fighters were, and they were terrified of them. Nili Ben-Dor remembers.
I thought that it's the end. I thought that some of the Ugandan soldiers started to shoot, and that there is going to be a catastrophic because of that. That nothing can stop it now, because the terrorists will shoot, the Ugandan the soldiers will shoot, and we will be dead in a few minutes.
They were totally sure that they are now going to be executed. There was no question. They didn't think that anyone coming to save them. They knew that they are now going to be executed.
One passenger, Jean-Jacques Memouni, soon realized that Amir and his men were Israelis. In his excitement to be rescued, he leapt to his feet. Fellow hostage Ilan Hartouf saw Jean-Jacques begin moving toward the Israeli special forces.
He jumped to say, "Wonderful for saving me." And I shouted to him not to move, but he didn't hear me. There was already too much noise from the shooting. Then I wanted to pull him with his foot, but there was too many bullets around.
Seeing Jean-Jacques coming toward them, the unit tragically mistook him for another armed terrorist. He was shot dead.
He jumped against my explicit instruction to lie down, and he was mistakenly considered to be a terrorist who is jumping in order to run and activate a bomb or whatever, and he was shot.
Jean-Jacques Memouni was one of three hostages killed in the crossfire, but by then, the hostages started to realize what was happening.
You could see how heads are starting to, you know, they started to raise a little bit their heads and just, you know, to look from the bottom, from the floor, to look up. And suddenly they identified, or they understood, that they're not going to be killed, that someone came to rescue them. And it's an amazing moment.
Sarah Davidson recalls the moment she realized they were rescued.
There was the whole shooting around. Somebody says, "Listen, there are Israeli soldiers here." And I lift a little bit my head up, and I saw an Israeli soldier with a white hat. It's like if there was an angel coming out of the sky, it could be more real. I can't describe it until now. When I feel it in all my body trembling, because it was so unacceptable. It was such a surprise. We couldn't even think about a possibility like that. And I said, "How come? We never get home from here." And he said, "Calm down, everything will be okay."
By now, the rest of the Israeli forces had landed and were battling the Ugandan army outside. The Hercules pilots were waiting in the dark, but the planes were their only escape route, and they were sitting in open sight of the Ugandan forces.
They were shooting all over the place, tracers, and I couldn't tell if they are aiming to us or not, because, you know, in the middle of the night you don't really see. It was unpleasant to see bullets around you, and it's relatively easy to ground an airplane. You don't need much. One bullet at the right place, the airplane is grounded. You cannot take off.
Amir's team had eliminated the terrorist threat in the terminal. It was time to move.
My issue was, at that time, to make sure that we can get the hell out of there.
The hostages had to make a dash to the planes before the Ugandan army could regroup.
We hold hands, all the four of us, to this young soldier, and we were running on the runway towards the airplane. I didn't see even it. I was in front of it, I didn't see it. I remember I was falling on the plate that you go inside. It was a Hercules, of course, no seats, nothing. We were standing there, all of us, with a tender, with a car, getting in, used as a toilet. There were wounded people up there. There were doctors dealing, taking care of them. And I said to Uzi, we never get home, no way. How can we take off from here? No way.
Joshua Shaney remembers taking off in pitch black conditions.
We, first of all, we had to count the soldiers a million times just to make sure we are not leaving anyone behind. It was so critical. And when we felt everybody that was ready took off, we did not take off at the same order because the decision was, you're ready, go, because somebody may hit us. Soldiers were still shooting here and there. I took off, full darkness, and my other captain, Avi Einstein, El Al captain, was next to me, and he held the night vision goggles, which is the first generation, not very good, but he kind of told me, okay, right foot, left foot, to keep the direction. He guided me. I didn't see the runway. I took off without seeing the runway. It was full dark at that stage. When I took off, immediately after takeoff, there was a lamp, a memory lamp for the Doppler, not really important, that suddenly came to my face with a big light. And this is something I forgot to dim. You have to dim all these lamp warning lights, otherwise it's dangerous. And I got into a terrible vertigo. I mean, really terrible vertigo at an altitude of, I don't know, to 100 to 200 feet. I felt very uncomfortable. Vertigo is something you have to believe the instruments, but you feel that you are like 90 degrees. And I say to myself, this is not the time to play games. I called the third pilot, another El Al captain, Rami Levy. I told him, replace me now, I'm going to close my eyes. And he jumped into my seat.
Despite the perilous conditions and Joshua's crippling vertigo, the plane took off successfully and turned toward the city of Nairobi in neighboring Kenya. But not everyone was on the plane. Ilan Hartouf's elderly mother had been left behind.
I said I had a mother who was in hospital 30 miles away, of course, 30 kilometers away. Of course, I knew they couldn't get there. There was no time for them to go and save her. But I told them to try to speak with whoever they can. And the people in the plane told me that Africans usually are very respectful to old women.
Meanwhile, the Israeli forces needed to make sure they weren't followed. A demolition team moved in to destroy Uganda's entire fleet of MiG fighter planes. As they were boarding the plane, the troops saw the body of their commander, Yoni Netanyahu, covered with a blanket. He had been killed in the raid. While the Hercules planes were still in the air, news of the secret rescue had already leaked.
We turn on the long-range radio, and I put it on the loudspeaker so the special forces will hear. It started with a French television station that said, Israeli commando just did this operation. Nobody believed it, you know.
A week after the hijacking ordeal first began, another seven-hour journey brought the planes carrying the troops, the hostages, and the dead back home to Israel. Guys, if you've been listening to the show, you've heard me talk about HIMSS. So, have you tried the trial month yet? Have you at least gone to 4hims.com to check it out? You're waiting, aren't you? You're waiting for that bald spot to become just a little more noticeable. Then, you're going to do something about it. Look, I get it. I'm the same way. Just take a minute and go to 4hims.com/OPS and see for yourself. Don't wait. Hims is the one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. They have well-known generic equivalents to name-brand solutions to help you keep your hair These are prescription solutions backed by science. It's not snake oil. And it's the internet, so it's designed to be user-friendly and convenient. Can you say that about your doctor's waiting room? I don't think so. And everything is shipped directly to your door. So easy. You ready to order now? Covert listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost you hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/ops. That's forhims.com/ops. That's forhims.com/ops. Once back on land, the hostages were given a hero's welcome by crowds of people.
Family, everybody, all our friends, friends from the kindergarten that we even forgot about them. All of them were there, either at the airport or then at our house. The house was full of people the whole week. Unbelievable.
The pilots could finally relax.
I guess that the human body is such that when you have this kind of responsibility, you function. Adrenaline is so high, you just function and you don't know how. I totally collapsed when I got home after that. Totally collapsed for a couple of hours before people started to come and to drink whiskey with me and champagne and others.
But even as the hostages were celebrating in front of the world's press, the Sayeret Matkal Black Ops fighters were quietly whisked away. For many years afterwards, its missions and the soldiers who carried them out remained hidden to the world.
We were totally separated from all the ceremonies and happiness that happened in the country. We were isolated and taken aside because it was top secret at the time. I mean, the way how we did it, the people who did it, it was top secret. And we didn't take part in any celebrations. We went back to our military base. There was a short debriefing, and then I went home. And that's it. I think that there was one moment later on that I understood that we did something, I would say, extraordinary.
Back in Uganda, dictator Idi Amin was humiliated, and he decided to take his revenge out on the last remaining hostage, Dora Block. She had been undergoing surgery in a Ugandan hospital.
And after the operation ended, kind of a retaliation, Idi Amin gave an order to the doctors at the hospital to kill her. And that's what took place.
Fellow hostage Sarah Davidson had a conversation with Dora earlier in the week.
I saw Dora Bloch at the bathroom when we went to wash our face. And she said to me, listen, I have passed so many in my life. I am already 70. I don't care about myself. I just want my son, Ilan, to get out of this situation. He's young. He's in the beginning of his life. He should get out of this. But for me, I am so calm and everything can happen. No problem with me. And it was amazing to see such a woman with her calmness. She was so nice, and she looked very nice. We waited 3 years until we heard that the remains body was there, found there, and she was brought to Israel to be buried in Israel.
Ryan Zinke is a former commander of Navy SEAL Team 6. He's been on many clandestine operations and knows the dangers involved.
The raid on Tabby, I think it was bold. I think it'll stand as one of the most bold special force operations in modern history. It happened at a period of time where you had an emerging nation whose destiny was uncertain. They had a force that was capable, but certainly not considered one of the world's greatest forces. The consequence of them failing, I think, was great. The consequence of the success was even greater, because it set the stage for Israel becoming what they are today.
The Israelis' overwhelming response to the hijacking was an early international victory in the war on terror and a model for future missions. Yoni Netanyahu became a national hero. The fallen soldier's heroic actions opened up a path that would take his younger brother, Benjamin, to the top of Israeli politics as Prime Minister of Israel since 2009. Next week on Covert, U.S. Rangers are in Somalia, Africa, to help feed starving civilians caught in the middle of a civil war. But during a routine mission in the capital of Mogadishu, their helicopter is shot down and they find themselves surrounded by rebels.
We just came out of nowhere and dropped into the city. And then, you know, the engagement begins from there.
Their fight to save themselves and get to safety is the real story behind Black Hawk Down.
The hornet's nest, so to speak, had been stirred up and we were receiving fire at every intersection.
Covert is an Audio Boom and World Media Rights co-production, hosted by me, Jamie Rennell. It is produced by Audio Boom's Ben Hosley and Rachel Jacobs, and by Pascal Hughes for World Media Rights. We had editing help by David Markowitz, with additional production from World Media Rights by Gerald Zabengwa and Damian Thorpe. David McNabb is the series' creative director, and the executive producers for Audio Boom are Brendan Regan and Stuart Last. If you haven't already, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorite shows. And if you've got some time, give us a review.